Page 350 on top. The top of 350. Last time. Pasuk Gimel. Okay, last week we explained the difference over here, the whole concept of Achedish Hazel Lochem, the difference between Nisan and Tishrei, and there's the world's creation in Nisan, the world's creation in Tishrei. Tishrei is nature, you have to bring Achedish, something new into nature. We discussed this whole thing at great length last week. So that's basically the first Pasuk, Achedish Hazel Lochem Resh Chadashim. But besides that, this is the mitzvah that Hashem is giving to Moshe Rabbeinu and the mitzvah of sanctifying the new month. In other words, like we learned, we started discussing last week, we didn't get too far with that aspect. In the time of the Beis HaMikdash, the way they told the months was not the calendars like we have today, even though the calendar was instituted in the time when it was still the Beis HaMikdash existing. But during the era of the Beis HaMikdash and after the Beis HaMikdash, the Gemara says, they used to tell the new months based on the testimony of the witnesses. Now, we learned last week, Achedish Hazeh Lochem. Hazeh means Hashem showed Moshe Rabbeinu a shape of the moon. That when you see this moon in this position, in this shape, then you know that it's the new month. And Bezdin, the next day, proclaims the month of Rosh Chodesh. Now, just to explain very briefly, because I don't want to go into dinim are complicated. It's very, very complicated because basically the moon, as we know, it has what's called the Meilad of the Levana, the birth of the moon. We know and that's one of the reasons why the Jews go by the lunar calendar, because there's a constant change in the Jewish people. There's better times, there's worse times, there's Beis HaMikdash, there's Golus, there's this, there's that. So basically, before the Shchedish, the moon disappears. Now everybody knows that the moon doesn't disappear. Basically what it means is the moon does not become visible. Because the moon's light comes from the reflection of the sun. So when the sun hits the moon at a certain angle, the moon starts. And the more the sun hits the moon, the bigger the moon gets until there's a full moon. And then the angle of the sun and the moon change. And therefore the visibility of the moon gets less, less, and less. Until Erev Rosh Chodesh, the moon disappears completely. And Rosh Chodesh, when the birth of what's called the Meilad, that we call out Shabbos Mevarchim, and the birth of the moon is the time that the moon starts again becoming visible. So the question was, when the witnesses came, let's say Sunday night, they saw the moon. So at night, Bezdin is not allowed to do things at night. So if Sunday night, they saw the moon, so Monday morning, they right away came to Bezdin, the witnesses. The witnesses testified, we saw the moon. Bezdin already calculated mathematically and scientifically if it was possible to see the moon or not. Because sometimes Adam, the witnesses think they saw the moon, but they really didn't. So Bezdin made the calculations if it's possible to see the moon or not. On Sunday night, let's say. If Bezdin figured out that Sunday night was possible to see the moon, and the witnesses came the next morning, so Monday morning, let's say they came to Bezdin, Bezdin checked out the witnesses, so that Monday, that day, became Rosh Chodesh of the new month. Now, just to explain one more concept. The birth of the moon, the lunar month, is approximately 29 and a half days. Just like the solar calendar is 365 and a quarter days. That's why every 4 years we have February 29th. So the same thing, the lunar calendar is really approximately, not exactly, approximately every 29 and a half days. Now you can't make Rosh Chodesh in the middle of the day. That's a given. You can't have a half a day from the new month and half a day of the old month. That doesn't make sense. So therefore the system we have today in the calendar is that 1 month has 29 days. 1 month has 30 days. That's why we have in the Jewish calendar, some months have 1 day Rosh Chodesh, some months have 2 days Rosh Chodesh. Usually it works every other month, except with a few exceptions. 1 month is 29 days, 1 month 30 days. 1 month 29, 1 month 30. That's why when a month is 29 days, for instance, this month that we're in now, Iyar, has only 29 days. Thursday, this Thursday is the 29th of Iyar. That's it. So Friday is Rosh Chodesh, it becomes Aleph Sivan. Last month, like Nisan, had 2 days. Why did we have 2 days of Rosh Chodesh? Because Nisan has 30 days, but it's really 29 and a half days. So we make the 30th day Rosh Chodesh, and then the Aleph Rosh Chodesh. Right? Therefore, the next month, it's going to have 2 days of Rosh Chodesh, because this month has only 1 day Rosh Chodesh. The exceptions are Kislev and Tevis. I mean, Cheshvan and Kislev are changeable. Not Cheshvan and Kislev, sometimes like this, sometimes like this. So the whole concept is, you can't make a Rosh Chodesh in the middle of the day. Now, if the witnesses, let's say for argument's sake, Sunday is the 29th day of the month, and the witnesses come Sunday night, they see the moon. Monday morning, they come to Beis Din. They say, Beis Din, we saw the new moon. So Beis Din makes Aleph on Monday. That means the previous month had 29 days. What happens if the witnesses didn't show up? What happens if the witnesses didn't show up on Monday? Because nobody did see the moon Sunday night. So that 1 minute. Let's say nobody saw the moon because it wasn't feasible to see yet. So they would come Tuesday. That means the previous month had 30 days. And Rosh Chodesh became the 31st day. Now, the Rambam does write, what happens if you have cloudy skies for 4 months? So you're going to end up making Rosh Chodesh every time after 30 days, right? So then at the end of the 4th or 5th month, you'll have Rosh Chodesh on the 25th day of the month. Because you just didn't see the moon, but the moon was out. So finally, you just keep adding days. So by the time 4 or 5 months or 6 months go by, when really 1 month was like this, 1 month like this, you're going to end up having Rosh Chodesh on the 25th day of the month, and you can't have a bigger joke than that. So therefore, the Beis Din figured out in the calculations what you could see, what you can't see. But this is basically the way it worked in the times of the Beis HaMikdash. Nowadays, we don't have a Beis Din. We don't have witnesses like that, and we don't have the whole procedure. So today, we have the calendar set up in a system that worked according to the feasibility of seeing the moon. Therefore, today, whether you see the moon, you don't see the moon, it doesn't matter. When the calendar says it's Rosh Chodesh, now, who made up this calendar that we have today? It was Hillel, but not the original Hillel. It was the grandson of the original famous Hillel and Shammai. So he had a grandson by the name of Hillel also. And that Hillel figured out a calendar that works forever. It's basically into 19-year cycles, and then it repeats itself. You know what I mean? And that all part of the system. They also made, like last week we were discussing, that Pesach has to be in the summer. In spring, I mean. Pesach has to be in the spring. So now the problem is, we mentioned last week that the solar calendar, meaning winter, summer, spring, and fall, that calendar has 365 and a quarter days. The lunar calendar, the 12 months of the lunar calendar, has 354 days. So you're 11 days off a year. Right? That means at the end of 3 years, you're 33 days off. At the end of 10 years, you're 110 days off. Now, if you're just going to go with the lunar calendar, Pesach is going to be getting 11 days earlier per year. Right? So, if you count, let's say, Pesach is supposed to be in Nisan. But Nisan is supposed to be in the spring. If you just lose 11 days a year, after 5 years, you're going to be 55 days earlier. So, you'll have Pesach in the middle of a snowstorm. And the Torah says Pesach has to be in the spring. So they came up with the Torah system of leap years. You add a month. We have two others because you add the month. Now, That's why we added right before Nissan, because Pesach is the concern that Pesach has to be during the spring. Everything else really doesn't matter. If Rosh Hashanah is in October or September, nobody cares. But Pesach has to be in the spring. So in order to verify and validate the fact that Pesach will be in the spring, so sometimes they had to add a leap month. So in the time of the Beis HaMikdash, Bezdin would sit down and lock themselves up in an attic and break their heads, everybody, and figure out, should we make a leap year? Shouldn't we make a leap year? Do we need to? Don't we need to? And the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah discusses all the causes that make a leap year happen and the causes that don't make a leap year happen. But that the Chacham had to figure out. We don't have that anymore. We have the calendar system. So the way our calendar is set up is a 19-year cycle. That's what it is, a 19-year cycle. And in the 19-year cycle, there's 7 leap years and 12 regular years. So you know already every year of the 19-year cycle exactly. And the Rambam writes which years of the 17 of the 19 are leap years and which years are the simple years. So basically, it's a 2-to-1 approximately ratio, but it's not always like that. So you have in the 19-year cycle, you have 12 regular years and 7 leap years. And after the 19 years, as a rule, the solar and the lunar calendar equal out completely. Because if you're missing 11 days a year, and let's say every 3 years you're going to make a leap year, but a leap year is 30 days. So you're still missing 3 days. You know what I mean? So you have to, they worked it out that in the 19-year cycle, the solar year and the lunar year coincide with one another. That's when you make 12 regular years and 7 leap years. That's all the mitzvah that's included in this pasuk. That's this pasuk teaching us, this is the whole concept of the leap. What? Because the Rambam writes in Kiddush HaChodesh that if the Meilad is after a certain period of time, it has to, the Meilad is the birth of the moon. If it's after a certain time, you have to make it skip a day between the Meilad and Rosh Chodesh. It all is connected with Le Yadu Rosh. It's a whole, that's what I'm saying, it's a very complicated issue.
What about the Shemitah?
Shemitah has nothing to do with the Kel. Seventh year, from Tishrei to Tishrei, it's whether it's a leap year, not a leap year, doesn't matter. No, Shemitah is Shemitah, the seventh year that you can't plant the fields. Now, the word times, that the Gemara says that one time they were waiting for the witnesses to come, was Rosh Hashanah, in fact, because Rosh Hashanah, the witnesses came, and that day became Rosh Chodesh, it became Rosh Hashanah. Right? So the Gemara tells a story, one time they were waiting for the witnesses to come, and the witnesses usually came right away in the morning. And one time they probably went to the mikveh first, I don't know what they did, they got lost. And they rolled in late in the afternoon, and Bezin thought already they're not coming. So they started the weekday Avodah, and after they started doing the weekday Avodah in the Beis HaMikdash, the witnesses popped in, making it Rosh Hashanah, which was a balagan, because they were supposed to do the Yom Tov thing, but they ended up doing the weekday things. So that Bezdin made a takana that time that if witnesses come after mincha time, we don't accept them, meaning we keep the rest of that day Yom Tov, but the real Yom Tov becomes the next day. And the Chachamim have that power given by the Torah. Eile meide Hashem asher tikru eisam mikroi kedesh. Eisam is written without a vav. Asher tikru atem. It's up to Bezdin to proclaim when Rosh Chodesh is. God doesn't even mix in. The Gemara tells us this is a very shows the power of the Jews that Hashem gave to the Jewish people. Hashem says the story in the Gemara is that the Malachim, you know, the Malachim have to work on Rosh Hashanah. The Satan got to come prosecute, and the good angels got to come to speak good about the Jews. So the Malachim get busy in Rosh Hashanah. So the Gemara says the Malachim come to Hashem and say, "Hey God, when's Rosh Hashanah?" They don't have calendars up there. So when's Rosh Hashanah? So Hashem says, I don't know. When Beis Din proclaims Rosh Hashanah, Rosh Hashanah, that's when we'll come to deal with business. Which means, who makes it or breaks it when Rosh Hashanah is, Yom Kippur is, Yom Kippur is the holiest day of the year. Who decides when the holiest day of the year is? Not Hashem. The Jews down here on earth in a body. These are the ones, that's why it's a Chedesh Hazel Lochem. It's up to the power of Beis Din to make the decision when Rosh Chedesh is. So this is the mitzvah that Hashem is telling Moshe Rabbeinu in Mitzrayim. Hashem showed Moshe Rabbeinu the image of the moon, and he says, Kazer Re'ei V'Kadesh, when you see the moon like this, the witnesses testify it, Beis Din figured out that it's possible to see the moon, and then Beis Din proclaims that day Rosh Chedesh. That's the mitzvah of this pasuk. Now, we're going into the next mitzvah of the same parsha. And that's pasuk Gimel. Dabru kol adas b'nei Yisrael emor, speak to the Eden and tell them the following. Ba'asa l'chedesh b'azeh, in the 10th day of this month, which was Nisan, v'yichu lahem, each person should take for themselves, ish sele v'esavis, a sheep, a lamb, for each father's house, sele bayis, one sheep or lamb for the household. Now, the pasuk over here is saying, this is the mitzvah, and this is only that year was this mitzvah given. We know that the Jews on the 14th of Nisan had to bring the Korban Pesach, the Paschal Lamb, that was a given. This is the only time that Hashem said, you need to take the lamb on the 10th day of the month. And you have to tie it to your beds, and keep it there for 4 days. And on the 4th day, you Dalid Nisan, at a Pesach, you're going to bring it as a Korban, as the Paschal Lamb. Okay? So this is the mitzvah that Hashem is giving them, and we'll soon see why Hashem told them to wait the 4 days, and why they have to take it on the 10th day, and so on and so forth. But let's first see what the Pasuk is saying. On the 10th day of Nisan, and again, that was only that year that they had to do this on the 10th. Every household should take one lamb or sheep, whatever. If the household will be too small to have one lamb, and I'll explain this whole thing in a second. V'lokachu ashchena akorev al beisei, him and his neighbor close to him should take b'michsas nefashis according to the number of people. Ish lefi ochle, each man according to his eating, tochese al eseh should be counted for the lamb. Meaning as follows. Just for people to understand, because we hear expressions, and if you don't understand what actually went on, it makes much more sense when you know what went on. Every Yom Tov, a Jew came to the Beis HaMikdash, Pesach, Shavuos, and Sukkot. There was a mitzvah, was called the Shalosh Regalim. Every Jew had to go up to the Beis HaMikdash. Mashiach comes, just for you interested, Vayid Midei Chedesh B'Shchotche, Midei Shabbos B'Shabbatai. When Mashiach comes, every week, every Shabbos, we're going to the Beis HaMikdash. Okay? Then the transportation would be much better and cheaper. When the time of the Beis HaMikdash, of the first two, there was a mitzvah, you had to be Eila Regal, you had to go up to the Beis HaMikdash, on Pesach, Shavuos, and Sukkot. And the Torah says, Leisero panei reikam. You cannot come empty-handed to me. Meaning, you can't come see me empty-handed, you have to bring me a gift. You have to bring a carbon. That carbon was called the carbon chagiga. That every Yom Tov, Pesach, Shavuos, and Sukkot, not Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. They were not the three regalim. Pesach, Shavuos, and Sukkot, every Jew had an obligation to bring a carbon to the Beis HaMikdash. That was called the carbon chagiga. That's what they ate as the meal of Yom Tov. The bus, it was a carbon shlamim. The carbon shlamim, the peace offerings, the Mizbeach ate, the Kohenim got, and the owner brought. So that's what people ate. Pesach, there was an additional carbon. What was the additional carbon by Pesach? The carbon Pesach. Now, the carbon Pesach, they ate for dessert. They didn't eat it as the meal. That's why, as everybody knows, on the Seder plate, you have the Zraya and the Beitza. The Zraya was for the carbon Pesach. The Beitza was for the corresponding with the carbon Chagiga, the regular carbon that they brought every Yom Tov that people ate. So, when they came to eat, first they ate the meal. Pesach, what do? You have the Seder, and then you eat Afikoman. We eat Afikoman, that's when they ate the carbon Pesach. That's what they ate for dessert. So the din was, how much carbon Pesach did you eat? You ate a kazayas of meat, an ounce of meat for the carbon Pesach. But that wasn't your meal. The meal was the carbon chagig with everything else that you ate. You know, the potatoes and the rice, if you're Persian, or whatever things you ate. That's what you ate to get, as the meal. For dessert, you ate the carbon Pesach. The minimal requirement of eating a carbon Pesach was a kazayas. So what happens if you have a household of five people? So you need 5 ounces of meat, right? A lamb, even after you give God some, and the Kohanim some, you're left maybe with 100 pounds, or let's say 50 pounds. I don't know what you have. Let's say 50 pounds. There's a pound is 16 ounces. So 1 pound is 16 kazayasim. Kazayas is an ounce. So 1 pound is good for 16 people. So if you have 50 pounds, you're talking 50 times 16. It's 800 ounces of meat. Now, what's a family of five going to do with it? Because you can't leave over anything else till the morning. It's forbidden. The Torah says you can't leave anything from the carbon Pesach until the morning. So what did they do? They had joint family carbon Pesachs. And that's what the Pasuk here is discussing. You have to have number of people. You have 10 people. Maybe you had a carbon, you have 50 people, whatever it was. You did based on the amount of meat that you figured you would need for the carbon Pesach to eat. That's how many families joined in the carbon Pesach. But at the time of shechting the carbon Pesach, you had to know exactly who was participating in your carbon Pesach. You couldn't add or deduct later. You could deduct, but you can't add. You can't add a carbon Pesach people for later. Okay? So this is what the Pasuk is saying. You have to take, the Torah is teaching us a lot of laws over here about the carbon Pesach. But that year, you have to take the carbon Pesach on the 10th day of Nisan, and you have to tie it to the bed, which the Torah doesn't explicitly say. And then you have to figure out how many people are going to be part of this carbon Pesach. You have to keep it in the house, check it out, make sure there's no blemishes on it for 4 days until the 14th. And like he says, Pasuk Hey, says Samim Zachar, it had to be an unblemished lamb. It had to be male. Carbon Pesach had to be a male. Ben Shana Yielachem, a year old. And like Rashi says, as long as it was born that year, it's called a year old. It didn't have to celebrate its first birthday yet. As long as the animal was born that year, it was kosher. You could take it from a lamb or a baby goat, whatever. Any animal like that, from that family, was kosher for the carbon Pesach. Okay, so that's what the Torah is saying, what you have to do. Involved, the Torah continues and says, what do you have to do with it? You have to keep it as a count, as a watching, an examination. Until the 14th of the month. You have to shecht it. Kol kahal adas Yisrael, the entire community of the Jewish people, when beino arbayim, in the afternoon. Now, the Gemara learns a lot of very interesting laws from this, just from this pasuk. Number one, you have to keep it for the 4 days. Okay. Then, it says in the pasuk, and this is a very important rule throughout Teda, one of the sources is from this pasuk. The pasuk says, v'shachatu eisei, they should shecht it. They should shecht it. Now, does everybody know how to shecht? Of course not. You have to know how to shecht. I mean, you have to know what you're doing. Yeah, you need a shechet. Yet the Torah says, v'shachatu eisei kol kahal adas Yisrael, that all the Jews have to shecht it. Either not shechting it to Kohen, or whoever it is that's shechting it for you. From here, the Gemara learns out that you can shliach shel adam kameisei, that the shliach, the proxy, the agent of a person is like the person himself. That means if I tell you to shecht it for me, it's like I shechted it. Even if you don't pay him. If I make you a shliach to do something, it's like I myself did it. Where do we learn it out from? The Gemara learns out from a few psukim. But this is one of the psukim the Gemara learns it out from, because it says everybody shechts it, and we know everybody can't shecht it. So when somebody shechts it for you, it's considered as if you shecht it. The Gemara also learns out from this pasuk that the way that the system worked in the Beis HaMikdash, in the Korban Pesach, it was divided into three groups. Group A went in, brought the Korban Pesach. They left. Group B went in. They left. Group C went in. Where do you learn it out that this should be done in three groups? Because it says, Kahal Adas Yisrael. The three words, Kahal Adas Yisrael, the Gemara learns out, there's three groups, so you shech the Korban Pesach in three groups. Now what happened over here, why did Hashem, there's a number of questions. Why did Hashem over here tell the Jews, you need the Korban Pesach by your bed for 4 days?
By your bed?
It doesn't say by your bed, you have to guard it. So why couldn't they just buy it on the 14th in the morning and bring it the 14th? Why did they have to do it in the
14th? Each family needs to have one.
No, if you have one sheep for 10 families, so one family took it. One family kept it by the bed or wherever they kept it. Now, the question is, why did Hashem over here command the Jews to do this when never later on is there such a mitzvah of tying the Korban Pesach to the bed? So the Medrash explains, because the Jews were very naked for mitzvahs. Like we say in that God, the Jews were empty for mitzvahs. And the Jews needed merits to go out of Egypt. So Hashem gave them a very, very difficult mitzvah. This mitzvah was for the Jews a very, very difficult mitzvah. And I'll explain why in a second. And in that merit, there was one of the schusim they had to go out of Mitzrayim. Why was this a very difficult mitzvah for the Jews? Because as we know, the Egyptians worshipped the lamb. Like in India, they worshipped the cow. So in Egypt, they worshipped the lamb. So now the Jews are taking the Avodah Zarah, the Getchke, the idol of Egypt, and they're putting it by the bed for 4 days. Do you know how dangerous that was? The Goyim could come and start killing the Jews. You're taking our gods, you're taking our idols, what are you doing? Yet Hashem said, I'm telling you to do something, I want to see your dedication and devotion to me, Hashem says, that you shouldn't question, and you shouldn't be afraid, even though Jews were petrified. But Hashem needed to give the Jews a mitzvah, that the Jews can have this chus, to go out of Egypt. So it says, in this brought down the Shulchan Aruch, that what happened when the Jews took the lamb on the 10th day of Egypt and they tied it, brought it into the houses, all the Egyptians came running and they said, what are you guys doing? What are you doing with our gods? So the Jews said, well, in 4 days from now, we're going to shecht your god, this lamb. And that night, God is taking us out of Egypt and he's going to kill all the firstborn. Does the Jews have the guts to say the truth? So what happened? The firstborn Egyptians, this is already after 9 plagues, to understand, they saw that God was business is business. God means what he says. So now, Hashem, the Egyptian firstborn hear that they're going to get killed in 4 days. So instead of starting up with the Jews, they ran to Pare. And said, to Pare, you nuts, let these guys out, we're going to die. They realize that they're going to die. Because so far, God was 100% batting 1,000. 9 plagues, but he's still batting 1,000, right? God was batting 1,000. Now, so the Egyptians went to the Egyptian firstborns went to Pari and said, you got to let the Jews out. Pari could fly a kite. So what did the Egyptians do? The Egyptian firstborn started a civil war in Egypt. The Egyptians started killing themselves. And the Gemara says, and this is what we say in davening, every day, every Shabbos, I mean, before Baruch Shomar, Lemaki Mitzrayim Bifchereihem. The Pasuk really wants to teach that God smote the firstborn Egyptians. It should have said, Lemaki Bifchereihem Mitzrayim, Kilo Elam Chazdei. What does it say? Lemaki Mitzrayim, to smite the Egyptians, Bifchereihem, with their own firstborn. Because the firstborns started the civil war. So on the 10th day of Nisan, when the Jews did this, a tremendous miracle took place. That they started a civil war in Egypt. The Goyim started killing each other. The Jews didn't even have to bother. So that's why the Shabbos before Pesach is called Shabbos HaGadol. Because of the Neis Gadol that happened. What do you mean Shabbos? The Jews left Egypt on Thursday. The original Egypt, Yetzias Mitzrayim, took place on Thursday. Thursday was the 15th. So if Thursday is the 15th, Shabbos is the 10th. So when God told the Jews to take the lamb and bring it into the house, it was on Shabbos. So when did the civil war start? On Shabbos. So because the miracle took place on Shabbos, the Shabbos before Pesach is called Shabbos HaGod. So then the question is, why don't we celebrate Yud Nisan? Because that's the day of the month when it happened. And Jewish Yom Tivs, holidays go based on the day of the month, not on the day of the week. We don't celebrate Pesach on Thursday. We celebrate Pesach the 15th of Nisan. So in Shulchan Aruch, the Alter Rebbe brings down, because 40 years later, Miriam, Moshe's sister, passed away on Yud Nisan. So it became, so to speak, a sad day. So we celebrate Shabbos HaGadol, the big miracle that took place, we celebrate it on the Shabbos before Pesach. The Me'am Leiz brings down another five answers or so, why the 4 days, and why don't we celebrate, why don't we have all these things, why don't we celebrate it on... But he just says, Tom, a few interesting things. Okay, this is Yitzchak. Yes. Two opinions. One opinion says Yom Kippur, one opinion says Pesach. Anyway, he goes through, why do you need 4 days? Because the Gzeira was 400 years and the Jews were only there 210 years. But by having the suffering and the anguish of what the Egyptians are going to do to them 4 days, they it was like the slavery for the rest of the time that they were supposed to be there. And God's name is four letters. I mean, a whole bunch of reasons why Hashem wanted that year they should have it for 4 days. But the basic reason is because they needed certain mitzvahs and merits to be able to go out of Mitzrayim. Okay, so now they have to shecht it. And they have to shecht it Beino Abayim in the afternoon. So now the Pasuk continues and says, in Pasuk Zayin, V'lochum in Adam, you have to take from the blood that you slaughtered the Korban Pesach with. V'nosnu al shtei ha-mezuzos v'al ha-mashkif. You have to put it on the two doorposts and on the lentil, meaning the top thing. Al ha-batim, on the houses, asher yeich lo oisei b'hem, where you're going to be eating the Korban Pesach. This is another mitzvah that the Jews needed to go out of Egypt. Like we said, the Jews were lacking merits. So in this last few days, Hashem gave them a bunch of mitzvahs to do. And they're called the two bloody mitzvahs. I don't mean it in bloody as in English, say bloody. The two bloody mitzvahs of Dam Pesach and Dam Milah. Because the Jews, like it says soon in the Chumash, if you were not circumcised, you were not allowed to eat the Korban Pesach. If you're not circumcised, you can't eat the Korban Pesach. And the Jews in Mitzrayim, by the way, did not give themselves the bris. Only Levi, only the tribe of Levi, kept to the true religion, and they gave the kids bris in Mitzrayim. But the rest of the Jews didn't.
Not even the Kohanim?
No, that's the Kohanim are from Levi. Oh. Same tribe. So Hashem gave them that night the two mitzvahs of Dam Milah, of circumcision, and Korban Pesach, the blood of the Korban Pesach to put on the doorposts. That's why it's interesting. Normally, not keeping a positive mitzvah, you don't get punished. In other words, if somebody doesn't put on tefillin, they don't get whipped. If you eat chazer, you get whipped. But if you don't put on tefillin, there's no punishment for not keeping a positive mitzvah, except two mitzvahs. If you don't do the Korban Pesach, you get kares. And if you don't do bris milah, the Torah says you get kares. Those are the only two positive mitzvahs that you get that Hashem kills you, you know, earlier. And these are the two mitzvahs Hashem gave the Jews, the two positive mitzvahs, that they should be able to leave Egypt when they did.
What is to do with the Korban? Is the meal?
No, Dafi Kaiman.
Oh,
that's in remembrance of the Korban Pesach.
Mm-hmm. But you still have to do, like, a symbolic meal. So we eat, like, the...
You eat a meal.
No, but don't you have to have a lamb, especially...
No.
Yeah, it's bone, something like
that. On the Seder table.
Yeah.
You don't need a lamb shank bone. We use the neck of a chicken.
Wait. I thought the lamb was...
Some people use the lamb. But...
It's mainly the
afikomen. The matzah that we eat as the afikomen is in remembrance of the Korban Pesach.
Zraya.
Yeah, but you don't eat the Zraya. The Zraya is... What's she called? The shank bone or whatever. That is the remembrance of the Korban Pesach. But you don't eat the Zeraya. So I'm saying, what do we eat? Eat in remembrance of the Korban Pesach is the Afikomen that they ate at the end of the meal.
What about the people that they eat the Rosh, head of the cow,
they make it Kabbalah? That's Rosh Hashanah. See, now you don't have to, oh, yeah, you have to cook it for Rosh Hashanah. Okay. Mm-hmm. I was thinking, it's not Pesach.
Why?
Zeraya means a hand.
Yes.
But it means Hashem took us out with Zeraya and the Tuya with an outstretched arm. Mm-hmm. But what, in we don't want to do things to make it too similar to the Korban Pesach. That's why you don't eat roasted meat the night of Pesach. Mm-hmm. You're not allowed to eat roasted meat. You're not allowed to eat a pot roast that doesn't have any liquid in it. Why? Because then you're having resemblance of the Korban Pesach. And Hashem doesn't want. So from one side we do things to remind us of the Korban Pesach, but it has to be done differently completely than the Korban Pesach. We don't eat the meat that's roasted. We don't eat the Zeraya. For the Korban Pesach, we eat matzah. So from one side we're remembering the Korban Pesach, but on the other side we don't have a Korban Pesach. We want to show that we don't have a Korban Pesach.
Different traditions. Oh.
That's the beauty of Judaism. Mm-hmm. If you want to make a nice picture for all artists in the crowd, if you want to draw a nice picture, you need to have different colors. If you have one color, you don't make a beautiful picture. And the beautiful colors, the different colors, have to blend together in harmony. Because if they clash, it's an ugly painting. If you have in music, if you want to make an orchestra, a symphony, you need a lot of different instruments. You can't make a symphony with one instrument. You need a lot of instruments. But again, if the instruments clash, they're off tune and they're hacking a chinik, you know, then it's not a symphony, it's a headache. So a symphony is when many different things, but they blend together in harmony. The beauty of Yiddishkeit, and this, by the way, is the beauty of Yiddishkeit. The beauty of Yiddishkeit is, we have one Torah. You know, Shabbos is Shabbos. You know, kosher is kosher. But the minhagim and the customs and traditions, the fact that there's so many different traditions, I mean, Chabad's the only right one, but the fact that there's so many different traditions and things, so that itself is the beauty of Yiddishkeit. Chabad is a conductor. Right, as I'm saying.
Right.
So it's the conductor, you know, making sure everything is organized.
Yeah.
But yeah. Okay. So the pasuk says you have to take from the blood, you have to put it on the doorposts, on the lentils above the doorposts, and okay. V'achlo sabasa b'layla azeh. You have to eat the meat of the Korban Pesach that night. Which means you're not allowed to eat it in the morning. It has to be eaten dafke at night. Tzlie shumatzis, you have to roast it and eat it together with matzah. Amreidim yechlu, together with the bitter herbs. And this pasuk again teaches us a halacha. And that is, here the Torah says, the Korban Pesach must be eaten with two side dishes. Matzah and maror. Together with the Korban Pesach. This is the only mention of Marad. There's no other pasuk that says, eat Marad the night of the Seder. So therefore the Gemara says that nowadays, when we don't have a Paschal Lamb, we don't have the Korban Pesach, Marad is only rabbinic. Matzah, there's another pasuk later that says, at night you have to eat matzah, which is separate from the Korban Pesach. So by matzah, the Torah says there's a mitzvah to eat matzah the night of Pesach, which means, even if there's no Korban Pesach, you have to eat matzah. But the only mention of eating marad is this pasuk when it says, together with the matzah and the Korban Pesach. So from there, the Gemara learned out that if there's no Korban Pesach, then you don't eat marad, you have to eat rabbinically. The Chacham said you have to eat marad, but it's not a mitzvah from the Torah. It's only rabbinic. Huh? Yeah.
It's from Torah.
Yeah, but the Torah says only the Korban Pesach together with matzah and marad. But if you don't have a Korban Pesach, then you don't have to eat marad.
And the logic.
Right. Yeah.
More is mentioned again because of Shani.
Yeah, but that's only because that was their version of the Korban Pesach. They ate the Korban Pesach the second month, not the first month. So they have to eat it together with matzah and marad. But we're eating, like dafi kaimen, you don't eat with marad. You don't eat dafi kaimen with marad. So we have a minig, it's only a minig of eating Pesach and eating matzah and Pesach sheni. But it's only matzah to remind us there was such a concept of the Korban Pesach. The marad was secondary to the Korban Pesach. So it wasn't really even to make a custom to eat marad, we don't do either. Okay, then the Torah says in Pasuk Tes, Al teichlu bimenu no, you're not allowed to eat it raw, ubashal mevushal b'mayim, or cooked in water. Now, Rashi learns, no, doesn't only mean raw, if it's not completely roasted, it's also called no, which means raw. Okay? So the Torah says, you cannot eat it partially roasted, you cannot eat it cooked. Kiyim tzli eish, you can only eat it roasted over fire. Reishay, v'al-kurov, al-kirbay, its head, its legs, and its innards. Meaning that's the way it has to be eaten, the head and together with the insides and the stomach and the legs and so on. So the Korban Pesach had to be roasted. If you put liquid into the Korban Pesach, it was not kosher.
Barbecue.
But it has to be roasted over an open fire. You couldn't put it in the oven with the heat underneath it, you know, to be make it considered roasted. That would be baked. Here it has to be tzli eish, means roasted over fire. Mamish, like open fire, like a barbecue.
Just because God likes the smell.
No.
Well, it comes in the davening in the morning. It says make
a good smell.
Good smell because he likes it, right?
Why? Because Mrs. God makes breakfast that way. What it means is Rashi says in Chumash that when it says reyach nichayach, a good smell,
yes.
Hashem has a nose. Hashem doesn't have a nose. I understand, so I'm explaining. I understand, you're right. If you translate the Chumash literally, the Torah says, Reach Nichayach Lashem, a good smell for God. So Rashi explains that what does it mean, Reach Nichayach? Rashi quotes from the Gemara from the Medrash, Nachas Ruach Lefanai Shamarti V'Nasa Ratzeni. What does the good smell mean by Hashem? Hashem doesn't have a nose. It means Hashem said, I enjoy the fact that I told you to do something and you listened to me. That's what it means. Now, what it means, so what's this concept of smell? What's the concept of a smell? Because the Gemara says, food, the body enjoys. Reach, the Gemara says, smell, is davar shehaneshama nehenes bei, that the neshama enjoys. Therefore, we make a bracha on it. You know, you smell the psamim, you make a bracha. Why? Because you are getting benefit from it. But it's benefit of a higher level. It's not a bodily, physical enjoyment. It's more of a spiritual enjoyment. So therefore, when Hashem is speaking about the Jews listening to Hashem, the Torah uses the word good smell to show that the enjoyment is on a more spiritual level than just the physical enjoyment. Yeah, music is also the pen of the soul, to a certain extent, yeah. But, Lamashal, you don't make a bracha on music.
No.
If you hear beautiful music, you make a bracha? No, there's no such bracha. So it's a different type of pleasure.
Yeah.
But you know, there's an interesting thing. It's all along the same lines. We're going off a little bit. You eat food, there's a bracha before you eat, and a bracha after you eat. Yeah? Mm-hmm. By psalmim, there's only bracha before, there's no after bracha.
Mm-hmm.
You don't make a bracha afterwards, you just make a bracha before.
What?
When you smell something.
Ah, yeah, of course.
You don't make a bracha before and a bracha after. No, but by food you do.
Yeah.
So why, so Shulchan Aruch, the poskim right. Why don't you make an after bracha on smell? Mm-hmm. Because when you eat food, you benefit when you eat. And then there's the pleasure of the food. After you finished eating, the body is still benefiting from the food. Uh-huh. Smell, once it's over, it's gone. So there's no after benefit, so you can't make an after bracha because there's no benefit from after the smell. After the smell, what do you mean once? Who said you need a shear? Maybe that's the shear. I mean, if you don't know halacha, the Rebbe brings it down in a maimer. No, he said maybe because there's no amount, there's not enough amount to make a bracha chreina. But again, when you have to understand a general concept in Chumash, by the way. Mm-hmm. When the Torah speaks about God in physical terms, it doesn't mean God in physical terms. It means understanding it in physical terms. By us, we can understand the way it works by God. But it's not that Hashem likes the smell of barbecue chicken and not cooked chicken or baked chicken. Now you have to understand, it doesn't mean Hashem doesn't have a nose and he doesn't smell. And, you know, Hashem doesn't eat either. Even though the pasuk says, as karboni lachmi, my bread, doesn't mean Hashem eats the bread. And when the Mizbeach burnt the carbon, it did, doesn't mean that Hashem, that was a good dinner today. You know what I mean? There is a story, there's a famous story, that a rabbi once preached that Rachmana Liba Boy, that God likes the heart. What the rabbi meant is when you do things with the heart, you know, you mean it. And God likes it. So there's a simple Jew that heard the rabbi's speech, and he took it literally, that God likes the heart. So he says, you know what? He's going to bring God, if God likes the heart, he's going to bring God a heart to eat. So he went to the butcher. In those days, he used to sell all parts of the animals. He took the heart of the animal, and he cooked it with side dishes. It was a delicious delicacy he made, and he's going to bring this to God. Now, where do you find God in this world? So he went into the shul, and he went into the Aron Kodesh. He opened up the Aron Kodesh, and he said, God, here's your dinner. I hope you enjoy it. I did my best recipe. And he leaves. A little while later, the shamus of the shul came to straighten up the shul, and he smells a smell coming from the Aron Kodesh. So look, he opens up the Aron Kodesh, and he sees a delicious meal. Day, the simple Jew comes back to the Aron Kodesh to see if God taka ate his dinner or not. He comes and opens the Aron Kodesh. He sees it's empty. He says, wow, that's great. God really ate it. So, I'm going to bring him another meal. He took the heart again and brought another meal. and he made a little bit different side dishes, and he comes and he opens up Darin Kedesh and he puts it in, he says, God, today I changed the recipe a little bit, I hope you like it, and he goes away, and again the Shamas comes and eats the food. To make a long story short, this went on for a while. One day, the Shamas walks into shul and he's all excited, he's going to get his dinner again, and the Rav of the shul happened to be in the shul then. And the Rav sees the Shamas going over to the Darin Kedesh and opening it up and taking it out, and he's whistling, he's all excited. The Rav said to him, what's going on here? What are you doing? So he says, Rebbe, I'll tell you the truth. The last few weeks, I don't know who, what, when, where, but every day there's somebody that puts this meal in there, and I assume it's for me. So every day I'm eating this the dinner. So the Rav says something's funny. So the Rav hid in the shul. The Rav hid in the shul to see what's going on. And a little while later, the Rav sees the way the simple Jew comes into the shul, and he's going over to Darin Kedesh, and he's such a good mood. He says, God, today's recipe is tops. I made it the best way. You're going to really enjoy this one. This is better than all the other ones I made for you. And the Rav is watching this, and finally he catches the guy, and he says to him, what do you mean, what am I doing? You said in a speech a few weeks ago that God likes the heart. So every day, I'm bringing God a heart, and every day God is eating it. So, like, what do you want from me? So the rabbi, after having a good laugh, the rabbi explained to him that that's not what I meant when I said God likes the heart. What I meant is, Hashem likes when you do something with sincerity, but God doesn't eat, and he doesn't have a mouth, and he doesn't, you know what I mean? So, you have to understand in Torah, when the Torah uses Reach Nicheach, or the Pasuk uses Yad Hashem, or Etzba Lekim, or Hashem Hashemayim Kisi, the heavens are my seat. Doesn't mean God sits. And he has a big throne up there and he sits down on it. That's not what it means.